Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Mr. Red's Lair. I am Mr. Red.
And I am April Mendoza.
Today, we are speaking to the filmmakers of a film called An Electric Sleep.
Yeah, if you guys want to introduce yourselves real quick.
Yeah, I'm Ben Taylor.
Hey, I'm Theo Brown. I'm the director of the film.
Oh, I guess I wrote and produced the film.
Right.
Can't forget that.
Already.
He's just here.
I already see the dynamic at play.
I love
you
it.
You write and direct, you write and produce.
Yeah.
So tell me, gentlemen, at the end of the show, by the way, we are going to be showing a trailer of the film, so stick around, and we're just going to hash it out, talk filmmaking pain and glory here.
Yeah, talk
you
about
know
the
what
making
I mean?
Of an indie sci-fi film, right?
Yeah.
That's exciting. Yeah. So.
Okay, now the first thing I want to ask is just, where do you guys come from? How did you guys find each other?
Oh, man. Yeah, so I'm from Northern California. Technically, my family is from L.A., both Soundcestral and the Valley. But when I was about 8, we moved up to NorCal, and then high school and all that. And then I did college in Tennessee, where I bumped into him.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, you're from Tennessee.
I'm from the great filmmaking hub of Dallas, Texas.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, grew up in Dallas. Went to college called Oakwood, and then transferred from there to small school in Chattanooga, Tennessee, called Southern, and bumped into this guy.
Yep. Oh, I love a good meeting story.
Yeah.
It's like you're destined to be, you know, like collaborators. Like, what are the chances of you guys meeting? And then, and how long ago was this?
Oh boy.
Oh man, I can't count that long. I wasn't a math major
at this point. Yeah, it was definitely. We're getting close to that 20-year mark.
Don't say those numbers out loud.
We're getting close to that.
Let me ask, what did you guys bond over?
Muppets.
Muppets?
No way.
Actually, I'll never forget. We were there early in the summer, and he was playing air hockey, and I came in, and he was wearing a Muppets hat, and I was wearing a Muppets belt buckle.
No, stop it. So, that's like a literal meet cute.
It's the corniest thing in the world.
May I ask which characters were on the belt buckle and the hat?
I had an electric sleep, wow.
Electric Mayhem hat,
which is the band with Dr. Teeth. I feel like your audience will immediately know.
Yes, I know who you're talking about.
Mine was just kind of like the original show logo, the Muppet Show.
Nice.
As a belt buckle.
Nice. Yeah. And you're talking the OG show. Irreverent, almost like Saturday Night Live.
Yes, we're not posers here for the Muppets.
Ben and Theo are not posers, everyone. They are the real deal. They know the Muppets. Okay, so what about films and stuff like that? Was that an immediate thing, connection?
I think... Because it's like, you know, hey, Muppets. All right. Well, do you like Spider-Man? Dude, I love Spider-Man. Right. It gets into Star Wars, Star Trek, superheroes.
Yeah. It's a Venn diagram of a circle. I mean, being truthful. So you start realizing really quick, it's like, man, there's not a lot of people that want to talk until 1 a.m. about Tron.
Right.
So this reminds me of Step Brothers a little bit. Like, did we just become best friends? Yeah.
Was it an immediate clicking between you two, or did you kind of think like, oh, I don't know about this guy, and then the other guy thinks, I don't know.
Because sometimes it is one of those things where it's like, something about you. I don't know if I like you or if I hate you. You know what I mean? Like,
some of my best friends, I thought they were the biggest assholes, you know, and now we're best of friends. Yeah. So, but you guys immediately click.
I want to hear more about your best friends. I
have such karma and such great friends. So you guys immediately clicked with one another, right?
Yeah. And then, like, because I remember there was the one weekend when Levi and the other homies from Oakwood came up.
Yeah.
And I know Levi from Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what are you doing with this guy?
Right.
And like, and then I think I met Kofi on a different trip.
Yeah.
And like, we kept like having like mutual friends from like other places.
Our friend Levi, I met him at Oakwood, the first school that I went. And Levi got really close because he also liked the Muppets and Tron. You're probably noticing.
Right. You know? I'm noticing like the Tron Muppet pattern.
It's a simple life, but it's a good life.
It's the life I leave, sir.
So, your friends have to like Muppets and Tron.
Well, I mean, it's kind of been a trend.
Welcome to the club.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thank you. Apart from Tron and Muppets, what else were your jams that you guys were like excited about as like, you know, young men getting into the arts?
We're guessing sci-fi films.
Yeah.
So I was actually studying film, but he was in animation. So we were in departments that are really close as well. And so there was that overlap. I mean, you guys can talk to him more, but, you know, he's drawing, learning from like these Disney masters that were there. And I mean, I'm big sci-fi, you know, fan just in general. Big James Cameron, obviously Steven Spielberg, grew up in the 90s. There was a group of us that all kind of liked those same kind of things. And it was a small school already. So once you kind of connect with those kind of people and you're in college, so you're still like learning about, you know, the process of filmmaking and things like that, you know, watching movies on the screen and then trying to break it down like within your circles. It's like the social network, but you're only talking about Tron.
Right.
I brought that back.
It's a wonderful thing being an adult because you could build a world for yourself that revolves around Muppets and Tron and Spider-Man. You know what I mean? It's just great being an adult. It's the greatest thing. I feel bad for kids today. What about you, sir? Like, he mentioned James Cameron, which, by the way, you guys nailed the James Cameron blue. You know what I'm talking about? In your film.
You can see the influence in your guys'
I can see it a little bit.
Like
someone
like I'm been like that color grade.
That kind of like that futuristic kind of thing.
Great,
that
looks great, by the way, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
We just watched it. Yeah. It was great. Great stuff. Great stuff.
Thank you.
And by the way, so you have a background in animation. What were your jams, like animation-wise?
Well, my animation Bible was Ren and Stimpy, actually.
Nice. Oh, right,
like,
right.
I had the DVDs, and I would just rewatch them. That was one of the main reasons why I started out in animation. I did not finish in animation, but, Ren and Stimpy was huge. All the superhero stuff. Again, obviously, very nerdy things.
Right.
But I do remember when we started connecting in the film world, because I was acting at the time, and the film students obviously always needed actors, and so then I started to mingle in that way. Eventually, I started taking screenwriting, and then I'll never forget the one summer you picked up the Reservoir Dogs DVD, and you're like, bro, have you ever seen this? I'm like, nah, and you're like, me either.
Oh, I love that.
And then we watched it on the smallest laptop possible.
It was the biggest laptop at the time, for the record.
And like, I remember that, like, that was one of those most formative, like, oh man, I think I like.
You guys discovered
films.
A gem together. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. Wait, so animation, are you still doing animation?
No. Okay. I can't remember the last time I've drawn anything.
Really? Yeah. Well, we love animation at Wild 7. We have our animation studio.
We have a spectacular animation department. And so, but let me, real talk though, you say you haven't drawn in a while.
Yeah.
You kind of like it, right? Like, you're
I love it.
Yeah, you know, like you're like, I'm good with not drawing.
Once I kind of transitioned into the film world, and then even more specifically what you mentioned earlier, I found that I like producing is my jam.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
I like writing. I just tried directing for the first time, which only made me love producing even more.
Right, right.
Like, producing is my jam. And it feels like a place where I can merge a lot of my different interests and not have to be the master of any of the interests. Yeah.
And no, then, I can relate. Yeah, I do both as well, but like there's something to producing where you get to be involved in every step of the journey. Yeah. And you can be creative. You can be a creative producer, you know.
Yeah.
But not totally like in control of the creative vision.
Exactly. So it's not your fault. You're like, right, fix that. Yeah. That's the wrong way to do it. Yeah. I can't do it, but you have to.
Now, if I may ask, when did the filmmaking start? Like the nitty gritty of it all?
I feel like it was in college.
Yeah.
It had to have been Social Vice.
Yeah, I didn't grow up making films, you know, especially, you know, you go to like a school and you're studying film. Most people's story is like, oh, I'm, you know, I was 7 years old and like parents had a video camera. Like I just loved watching Back to the Future and Twister DVDs with director's commentary.
Yeah.
Because like that was like,
I miss that.
That was your film school.
You know, I'm in high school, you know, and like Lord of the Rings is coming out and there's like this indie movie at South by Southwest called Brick. And I don't know what that is, you know. And so you're kind of like picking and choosing. My mom was like a big into like, especially like black independent kind of films and stuff. But it wasn't until I went to college was when I first started making projects. And my first year at the school, so my sophomore year, we have to produce a short film. And BJ actually acted in it because he was in his acting bag and stuff at the time. But I think that was like the first time really where for myself was kind of getting used to like, oh, okay, this is the process of filmmaking. And you also realize really quickly, right? Like, look at the blank page or whatnot. It's like, I'm either the worst writer in the world or I'm Hemingway. Right, and you type that first word and you're like, gosh, it's clearly not Hemingway.
Right. And you weren't drinking enough. That was the problem.
But that was like the first process. But BJ was the Social Vice of the school as well. And so when he wanted to kind of make, you know, video promos, again, this is 2007, 2008. So that kind of video content you weren't seeing a lot of. And all of a sudden, we're making these, like, comedy videos that play in front of the entire school.
Okay.
You know, so it was kind of,
it was like your school's bulletin. I don't know if that's what you call it, but we had something like that. Like, every morning, they would have, like, a little, like, skits and stuff.
Then
tell, like, the news of the school.
So it was like a Thursday thing when everyone came together. There'd be some presentation or whatever. And when I was the Social Vice, I had this opportunity to promote one of our parties.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it was the Joker party. Mm-hmm. And that was like our first time doing a superhero concept where we had this really, I remember him being talented, but we had this, a friend of ours.
Michael Ennis,
man.
Come on, man. That's the OG.
We got him in white makeup all the way, like all around his face, his green hair, and he was terrifying as the Joker in our little short.
Oh, nice.
We really got to say, though, the Joker is the name of, like, the student handbook. I just don't want, you guys are like, the Joker release party with these guys?
Yeah, it was definitely
with Warner Brothers.
The ideas were random, for sure, but we figured out a way to get Joker on screen.
Yeah. Right.
So, fun.
When you were making these, like, shorts, the natural thing for you guys to do was to lean them towards comedy, right? Or were they just any genre? Or were you already doing the sci-fi thing?
Man, that's a great question. It was kind of all of it. I mean, for those kind of parties, the cool thing was that there was a specific, like a marketing, like a commercial, or even like a movie, you know, where like, hey, we're looking for this kind of product, right, kind of thing. And then we would go back from there. So we're like, okay, maybe the Joker release video is a serious one. But he had a 90s party, which you're going to love. Of course, we involved a Muppet in that, you know, so that had like a bit of a comedy thing.
Of course.
Really, we were just kind of using any and every opportunity to try out different things. That was something I really wanted to do, like in film school, was more so like just trying stuff. Let's just like see if it works. We've got this gear and stuff like that. Like, I just wanted to, you know, try master shots and things like that. Just trying to, like, learn and understand the cinematic language of those things. Mm-hmm. But obviously, it's such a basic level because you're still trying to learn what is a good story and also actually how to write a script formatted, right? And you're just kind of learning everything at once. So I think for myself especially, I was just trying, like, man, this looked cool. Let me just try to do this.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't you miss those days, though? I feel like you could be, like, way more experimental when you're, like, getting into it for the first time.
Yeah,
and then over the years, sometimes you kind of restrict yourself a little bit and you get so in your head.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like there's something really special about like the college years.
It's the curse of knowledge in a way.
It is, yeah. Really?
You miss the days when nobody cared.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
when you're
could
like,
just
let me just shoot
thing,
this on my phone.
You
know. Like,
well, I was
stuff.
Even going to say at the time, he's in film school. I don't think I had a degree proclaimed at the time. And so I was just doing these parties. I was running these events. And so when we partnered up, I'm haphazardly producing.
Right, yeah, I was going to say.
And I, what I found was even throwing these events was actually my film school for a producer because I learned how to, you know, juggle all the things and, you know, herding all the cats. And so, we're very haphazardly just like learning how to make stuff because we're giggling and having fun. And, there was absolutely like an innocence to it.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Just kind of exploring and just like really enjoying film, I guess.
Yeah. And it's crazy to think that like everything that you've done up until this moment has led you exactly where you're at today.
Yeah, that's
true. You know, and it's been training you to make your film. Yeah. Oh, I wanted to ask you guys, so going back to An Electric Sleep, is this your guys' first feature?
Technically.
Yeah?
Yes.
What do you mean by technically? Yeah.
Yes and no.
Yeah.
Well, because, you know, go ahead.
So we started An Electric Sleep. Obviously, a lower budgeted film. But in the process, and I'm sure we'll talk about this more, but like in the process of making that, I had a friend that was asked to kind of make like this kid, adapt a kid's book pretty much into like this kid's movie kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
And so while we were in post of Electric Sleep, BJ kind of did like the first kind of writing of like on that project. Mm. That project had a bigger budget. We shot that actually in like in Atlanta around there.
Okay.
Bigger budget. Obviously the timeline was buttoned up. And then, you know, so we kind of like got that done and then went back to Electric Sleep. So
the production part was first for Electric Sleep, but it wasn't the first completed.
Yeah.
Which is funny because our DP, because like basically when we did our first feature, Debbie and the Devil, it was my first, his first, our partner Chris's first, and then our DP, Lucas, it was his first. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of people's first feature film.
Yeah.
But our DP ended up getting a job because somebody saw the footage from our film.
Mm-hmm.
So he ended up getting on a feature and finishing that before our movie was done. So, side little connection.
Yeah. Well, that's why you do it,
right?
It's like, and what we were saying when we were getting ready for the project was, we need to get on set for a feature film so people can look at us as feature filmmakers.
Right.
And that way we can either get the bigger jobs, the bigger budgets, whatever. Right. And it's almost immediately
when
someone finds out, oh, you shot a feature or are shooting a feature.
Doesn't matter if you finished it or not. It's just
we
worked
need you on
one.
Set for the next one.
Right.
Right.
And it's like it works like immediately. Yeah. Yeah. And it's so incredible. Crazy, yeah.
What is the status of this children's thing? And side question, are there any Muppet-like creatures?
And to answer the sec one, it is the saddest, most unfortunate no.
No Muppets.
It's done. It was kind of released in some ways, like connected as like a film. Mm-hmm. But I think the final where it kind of landed is like they kind of broke it up into chapters and released it as like a mini series kind of thing like that. It's available. It's called Smoky Mountain Rescue. It stars three children and a dog.
Yeah.
So clearly we wanted to make it as easy as possible.
There was a bear. Even
there
on
was
set.
A bear. We there did have a bear.
So what do you mean?
Yeah. Wait, like a live,
like a real bear.
A real bear.
And there was a wrangler.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we can
obviously
we can talk about that. It was incredible.
This is not a wild bear. I think I get your question.
I have to ask, what, you know, for a lot of first-time filmmakers, which you guys are kind of like two-time first-time filmmakers in a way with this film and with An Electric Sleep, we get to a point where it's like, fuck it, I got to make my movie. I just got to do it and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Was An Electric Sleep that? Was it?
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah,
that.
We love. Yeah, we love hearing like what was that moment that you guys were like, you know what, fuck it, like we're just gonna make this movie.
So we had been working. We'd done a bunch of short films, obviously since college, and then after graduation, we're out here.
Mm-hmm.
We have a very specific goal. We want to make superhero stuff, sci-fi stuff, and we thought, oh, we'll make some shorts and raise the money and get in the festivals, all that. Mm-hmm. And then we came across some information online where this guy was basically saying, nah, don't do that.
Yeah.
Spend a little bit of money on a feature film, and then you have a product that can be bought and sold.
Right.
And so from there, we wrote like three or four scripts.
It changed the entire paradigm of how we approached.
Completely.
Like, and I remember somebody said, he said that a film is a movie that nobody paid to see. Mm-hmm. And now this guy, he'd been working as a producer in the 80s and 90s, like, know, long, he worked, who's Roger Corman's guy.
Oh, nice.
And so, like, again, like, his approach that he was saying really, I think, aligned with, you know, the thing that the Muppets, the thing that Pulp Fiction, the thing that Avatar, Terminator, all these things have in common is that these are entertainment things that audiences resonated with, have certain standards, and made money. And I think even when we were making our shorts, we would notice when we moved out here, we were making shorts, screening them at our house, moving to bigger venues, people kept showing up. And I know that I didn't really realize at the time, you know, I'm like, I'm just kind of making stuff. People are like, wow, this is really good. But like, to me, it's clearly not Pulp Fiction and stuff.
Right.
But hearing that guy just kind of like talking to a thing, I think it was the kind of thing where I think for us, going to what BJ was saying, we can keep making shorts. And obviously, people do break out in shorts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you put in 50,000, you know, 60,000, whatnot. Yeah. Do the festival thing, maybe get into Sundance or something like that, and maybe.
Yeah.
But for us, he was approaching feature filmmaking, and he's like, no, you make movies.
Yeah.
Like you're starting out, like you're changing the paradigm almost like for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which,
totally.
Did you notice after the movie was released, it's put on the market, the paradigm does shift for a filmmaker?
Oh, immediately.
Could you explain that a little bit?
I noticed for myself when I would talk to people, oh, hey, like, what do you do? I mean, obviously, we're in LA, right? It's like, oh, what do you do? Like, oh, I work in film. Okay, what do you do in film? I direct. Mm-hmm. And of course, it's like the, sure, just so everybody.
Right.
And then like, oh, like, do you do shorts or movies? Like, oh, no, like, features.
I did a movie, motherfucker.
Yeah. but usually, right. And I'm sure you guys probably found this out as well, it's like usually something changes. And even like for myself, you know, like working with people that I admired in the industry, they were just like, doesn't matter what it looked like, you did it.
Yeah.
You have now gained entrance into a different room. Doesn't mean that like
you
have
level up like in a video game. It's like, you know, like level 4, you know?
Yeah.
Until the next level up.
Yeah.
You know,
so it was huge. It was for me, I mean, it's changed everything. It's changed how I can connect with people. It's helped me, you know, get in different rooms now just because it's like, oh no, I've done it.
But I also think a big part of it is the confidence. Like I think more than anything it allows you to have more confidence as a filmmaker, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, I don't know if you guys ever experienced like, what's that called? Like, I'm blanking on the word.
Imposter syndrome.
Thank you. Yes, imposter syndrome. Have you guys felt that? Like,
of course.
Especially before making a feature film.
Well, and so, you know, talking about this paradigm thing, there's so many phases of emotion and experience with your feature that no one could have prepared you for.
Yeah.
You know, there's the suicide edit where you're just like watching this thing and you're just like, what have you done? Like, what is this?
We made a terrible mistake.
We made a terrible mistake. And then you have like, when the suicide edit is now a final cut, and you're like, oh, that's pretty good. And then you get the color and then you get the VFX. And you're like, oh, I think we did something.
Yes.
Then it's the festival submission.
Yeah.
And then you're like, what have I done? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, we're going to get into this festival. This one's a shoe-in.
Yeah.
And then all these like, no, we don't want you. No.
Oh my God.
But then you get into your first festival.
Yeah.
And you're like, it's just this. And, you know, eventually get to this point where you finish your festival. Mm-hmm. You actually get a distribution deal. You get on the streaming mm-hmm. service. Mm-hmm. You know, we've won some awards that I'm really proud of.
Nice, congratulations.
Best director, best picture.
Nice.
We've done a good job.
Awesome. Yeah.
And now people can see it around the country, mm-hmm. soon to be around the world.
Yeah.
And it's like.
And it's on Tubi.
It's on Tubi.
Which is amazing. We love Tubi here.
We love Tubi.
I know, I hear you guys talking Tubi's about and praising Tubi. We're huge fans.
Yes.
Tubi, sponsor us, please.
Yes, please.
But
call us all.
Yeah. I love it because it is international, you know, and mm-hmm. it exposes you like to these completely new audiences that are mm-hmm. outside of your guys' circle. Mm-hmm. Like, have you guys started to see that yet? Like, where it's just outsiders that are like reviewing your film or commenting on it.
Every so often I check Letterboxd.
This guy checks like every week.
I check it every day.
He's like, I'm like, what are you doing, Nas? He's like, oh, just vanity searching. He's like, oh, I got a new review on Letterboxd.
Hey, part of the paradigm shift is vanity searching. It's the greatest thing.
Well, the thing is, I don't even think it is. I think, again, like for me personally, it's like that's a part of like movies, right? You hear like the bigger people, they're like, oh, you know. Movie came out, let's check the traits, what are the reviews coming in? And I think now for us, the Letterboxd kind of thing is a thing that changes it from like, oh, here's a thing that's only my friends are seeing. It's like, no, mm-hmm. once it's out there,
you know.
Especially.
Mystic 23006, which was my old Yahoo account from like sixth grade, is like reviewing your film, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't know this person at all. Like, it's like your film, your movie has to stand on its legs, or maybe it doesn't stand on its legs, depending on, you know? And I think there's something to that. I mean, maybe for some people it is vanity, but I think for other people it's like, you know, what are they seeing? Are they seeing the same things that I know? Are they mm-hmm. seeing something different?
Right.
Because I think we're learning still, you know. I think that's a very important part, the review,
fact,
the critic part.
Yeah. I think that's like something that we've really held on to, actually, is we're not going to like lie to ourselves about this project, right?
Right.
It's not on Netflix, right?
Right,
like,
right.
We know where it's not and what it wasn't going to go to Sundance. We knew that there's a certain moment in the work that we're doing where we're like, oh, Scorsese is probably not going to watch this movie,
right.
But I think there's something important in having that self-awareness and being able to see that, because then the next question is like, well, why not? Mm-hmm. What do I need? What can I do next time? How can I fix that?
Right.
What can I apply?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of like, you know, leveling up and stuff, I'm really looking forward to the next film of you guys, because you guys did a sci-fi film on what I imagine to be a limited budget. But you guys did a lot of, there was a lot of special effects in
213,
that. 213 special effects.
Wow.
Yeah.
Real quick, before.
How do I know that?
Can you
I have nightmares.
Can you guys quickly tell our audience what your film is, just briefly? Like, what is an electric scene?
Okay. Oh, I haven't pitched in a while, man.
I mean, that's why I passed it to you.
It's okay. It doesn't have, you know, just generally.
It doesn't have to be the
just generally,
the
like,
AFM
what
pitch.
Is it? Yeah.
So it's, first off, I'll say, if you're a fan of Twilight Zone or Black Mirror, do I look into this camera?
Yeah, this one's good.
Go for it.
If you're a fan of Twilight Zone, Black Mirror, that's what we're really inspired by.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
We are also, I'd like to say this anytime I can, we wanted to see minorities in leading roles in a sci-fi that had nothing to do with about race or culture.
Yeah,
it's
love
just
that.
A
yeah.
normal, 100%. Stupid scientist have a problem issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, the story. Because of the budget, we had to come up with something very high concept, low budget.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea was, we have this teenager that has this fatal disease. They can't find the cure. But she found out the scientists that are responsible for making the disease.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes to find the scientists, holds them hostage, demanding the cure. Mm-hmm. All the while, there's this team of mercenaries coming to kill them all mm-hmm. to keep the secret dead.
Okay.
I wrote that before the pandemic because I am a prophet.
Whoa!
He's got the beard and everything.
Okay, that was crazy. Which great pitch. I love that. I was gonna ask, was it before the pandemic or during
like
or after?
The idea was around 2017. The finished script was 2018.
That's
and we got on set 2018.
It was stopping you. I mean, it's so weird to say this because we were shooting in 2018. Mm-hmm. One of our leads breaks their foot. Not on set.
Mm-hmm. But not your fault.
Breaks their foot.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So like wow. The things that we have left are like walking, running, fighting, all the things that like, you know, gotta
all the foot stuff.
Not just like walking, but like we need you to be like healed. Yeah. So it's like, all right, indie crew will be back in 4 to 6 months to finish that. So then we come and then we do that kind of stuff as well. But the great thing that, and this was always intentional, is that we have a really close friend named Ralph Jean-Pierre, incredible human, incredible brother, and also an amazing editor. Mm-hmm. He was working on Lost in Space at the time. He worked on the M. Night Shyamalan show, The Servant. Now he's working on Tokyo Vice.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So not only as a storyteller, but like also having someone like them from the jump where we're like, hey, this stuff is happening. Can we get started with this? Mm-hmm. You know, was it good, fast, or cheap, right? You can only have two. We want it to be good and we want it to be cheap.
Yeah.
So, like, even while we were waiting to keep shooting, we were still, you know, like, we were still seeing, like, you know, a couple of reels of the film and stuff like that. So that plate kept spinning, which was great for when we would be able to shoot. We got most of our stuff done in 2019. Had a couple more stuff that we're like, oh, we'll just pick that up at the top of 2020.
Love it. Surprise.
When the news of COVID hit, did you guys think, what have I done?
You know? Are you excited? Kind of like, oh, we can capitalize on this.
I left right away. My family's up in NorCal. My sister was home alone. My parents were actually in Hawaii at the time. And so I was like, I think I need to go like, take care of my sister real quick.
Yeah.
Because she didn't know what to do. And then my parents are coming in. Like, they have no idea what was going on. So they're all, like, Hawaii, like, chilling, coming off the plane. And I'm like, cover your face. You're at the airport. It was crazy. Yeah. I kind of took the opportunity to, like, run and hide for a couple months. Like, I don't even think we really talked about the movie.
Wait, so was it your film? It was in post, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we were in post. I mean, there was a couple of scenes. And this truthfully, this goes to our editor. Because mm-hmm. We had, I'm sorry, I'm trying to think back. Yeah. We had a cut of the movie before COVID.
We did.
Because I remember that we were just like, there was this hit, and we were like, I think that's the movie.
We were close to.
We were close to there. But then, like, kind of like during COVID, like, our editor was like, it would be really great if we can do these pickups, maybe write like some additional scenes and things like that.
Yeah.
And so we were able to, I mean, this was obviously COVID was a terrible, terrible thing. But one of the things that we were able to kind of use it to is that all those film festivals, everything like that, everything got hit on pause.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it wasn't like the world was going and it was just us slowing down.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Everything slowed down.
Yeah.
So we were able to, you know, like shoot a couple of scenes to help like kind of bridge, you know, things more. For myself, I was working with our colorist and our VFX person trying to get that to work. Our VFX person was based, you know, in Philadelphia as well. We have never worked on a project this big, that many shots.
Right.
So
it's a lot, yeah. And it looks great. Like,
you said 213.
Really impressive,
213.
Yeah, the VFX artist, he is, like, it was one guy who did it.
One guy did all the shots.
He's a savant. Like,
that's so cool, yeah.
Hopefully now he knows how awesome he is.
I text him good morning every morning.
Because he did an incredible job.
Brady. Wow. Shout out to Brady. Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I liked about, amongst many things, I loved your film, takes place like 5 minutes into the future. You know what I mean? Like it does, it's not like 3,000 years into it. It's kind of like 5 minutes. Everything is, all the details are micro.
Yes. Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I think that was intentional.
It's kind of nice.
It was,
because it has to do with the virus. You know, people post pandemic probably don't want to watch a film that's just about a virus. So it's like having that sci-fi element where it's like, you know, you can kind of take yourself out of that, like, realism.
Yeah.
It's kind of really a blessing in disguise, you know what I mean?
I got a bit of counsel. It was 2021, or no, it was 2020. The American Film Market for 2020. I got a bit of counsel. Mm-hmm. Well, he's like, well, you have a unique opportunity where this is very connected to the times, so we tried a different title.
Yeah.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have?
or the friends you find along the way. Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
I was trying Incurable at the market, and nobody, I mean nobody, watched the movie or gave us any kind of, so when we switched it back to Electric Sleep, that's when we got our offers.
But it's a cool title. I'm glad you guys stuck with this.
That was the move.
You guys were at AFM 2020?
Yeah, the digital one.
Yeah, we were there too.
Oh, okay.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Were you guys ever in like the horror room?
I didn't go to the horror stuff.
Okay.
BJ was not only the tip of the spear, but the entire spear when it came to like the distribution things. And he and I talked about that a lot, but because for our film, obviously, it's like there were certain things we talked about, like you just kind of want to see yourself. And I think, obviously you can talk more to that, but like that whole distribution thing, you know, BJ's just listening to podcasts, reading, you know, like having these printouts of stuff. So all the AFM stuff, I mean, that's kudos to him, man. Yeah. Just running through brick walls to make that happen.
Yeah, we did it. We got to watch pitch things. It was funny.
Yeah.
You know,
that's so funny. We don't share that experience with most people. Yeah, so it's
there's not a lot of people that know AFM or go to AFM.
But especially that specific year. It was a very odd experience.
There's a lot of things odd about it. Because I was in my living room. Actually, no. I did go to Ife's office sometimes for my meetings.
Yeah.
But then there was a lot of the different sessions I would just be watching in my living room.
Did you guys see the pitches?
Nah, I never really do the pitches, to be honest.
It was probably the most painful videos I've ever seen.
Well, because
in my
life. Was virtual, and there was all this technical difficulties where people are being frozen. It's like they're frozen,
and then
they have like a countdown.
Yeah.
And it was very awkward, but I felt really bad for that.
Yeah, it was.
But it was an experience, but I'm glad we went.
But this is what I wanted to ask to the 5 minutes in the future thing.
Yeah.
What were other films were like reference points of this?
Slight was a big one.
Slight.
It was J.D. Dillard's first feature film. He did Sweetheart, and he did aviation movie. I'm forgetting the name.
Devotion.
Yeah. That was a big one. Black Mirror, of course. I mean, we naturally like Black Mirror.
Love Black Mirror. Yeah.
Yeah, I think even it's more Black Mirror than Twilight Zone because it is tech-based, as opposed to like being fantasy, whatever you would place Twilight. Right. But yeah, I mean, we were trying to be smart, and obviously Black Mirror was hot. The Twilight Zone reboot was just popping off when we were finishing the script. Mm-hmm. So in our head, it was like, oh, well, there's this wave, we can jump on it, and let's make this thing. And then, of course, by the time we're all done, you know, I went to the last season of Black Mirror, and Twilight Zone's dead, and it was kind of like, oh, all right. Well.
But it was intentional. This may not sound sexy, you know, like other filmmakers maybe just have an idea like we got this idea, we got to run with it. I think for us as well, and BJ Curran, if I'm wrong, but like we also knew, story aside, it's got to check off some things. It's got to be entertaining. It's got to have, I know for myself as a black director, that's something that I've actually heard from like higher producers. It's like there's not a lot of just black people, especially like black men that understand the sci-fi workflow when it comes to those things. And that's usually why you see like a sci-fi movie, it tends to scale a lot higher than like your, you know, maybe like a horror, you know, or a Duplass Brothers kind of thing, because the buy-in is going to be immediately so much more. And that was a decision that we made like from the jump was like, if it's got to have this tech, then it's like, how do you deconstruct it in a way that works for our budget, you know? And so even like, you know, the idea of like the heads up display being in the contact was intentional instead of them having glasses because it's cheaper for an actor just to blink.
right.
Than
right.
to this, think like, about, you know, every, so like all that stuff was so intentional.
Yeah. Which I laugh every time, and Mikel knows I love him. It's cheaper to do that without the glasses But at the end, when he just decides to type like crazy, I was like, come on, Mikhail. Like, one of those letters you're typing.
Was it funny to watch when they're just like.
Well, because like we're watching him do it, and I'm like, obviously it's great and it works. But I was just like, oh, this is going to be a VFX nightmare. I think half of the VFX time was spent on him typing.
Right. Yeah. Because, you know,
but it looked great.
Normally,
looked great.
You would have a VFX person on set, right?
Yes. Yes.
So you guys didn't.
So we would call. Okay. We had a buddy that we'd call.
Yes.
And he's like, oh, do this, do that. And we're like, okay. And then, but then by the time we're done with the movie, he was swamped with all of his stuff.
Mm-hmm. He's working on Star Wars. I think literally he's a real VFX. He's a professional. Okay. So
he's like, swamped is what he was.
I can't help that anymore.
Yeah, he couldn't do it. So, you know, the guy that we brought in, again, he killed it.
Yeah.
But it was.
Yeah. Do you think that you guys were able to work with him because of the pandemic specifically? Because it was a slow time and.
With Sean, the original guy you're saying?
Your VFX artist.
I went to, again, going back to our college, very small school. Yeah. And so I knew, especially in the film department, you know, we had a really close relationship, you know, from like the top down kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I was friends with him, even though it was a couple of years between us. But going to that kids movie.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say.
He was a senior that year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like, and I worked very closely, like, with as a mentor.
So the kids movie was shot with the school we went to.
It was shot with the school.
Yeah, so it was kind of like, it was half, you know, doing the program, the book, but also the students had the opportunity to come work on set.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and that was great because, you know, you're hanging out with them and you're treating them to, like, you know, 15 kids to Waffle House, so it only costs, like, $6.
And, Waffle House.
We had our first Waffle House experience.
Oh, my gosh.
God bless you. Yeah. Isn't it beautiful?
It's a wonderful place. Love it, yeah.
Got some eggs and bacon.
I don't know what you guys are talking about. I can't stand
give me
it.
Those Captain Smothered hash
browns. No one wants that.
The
no
waffles
one wants
are
that.
Bomb.
No, uh-uh.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I refuse.
Gentlemen, there is a young person or old person out there that wants to do what you did. They want to make an indie film that's crammed with special effects. What advice do you have to this person? Or they just want to be filmmakers.
They just want to be right to what you have.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I love that.
Like literally what you have.
Yeah.
And
not what you think you have. Because we thought we had some stuff. Like the first house location, we had it.
We did.
Hey guys, we have the perfect house. They said you're cleared to go.
Right.
All right, we're on our way. Like, well, it was the week before.
It was the week, yeah.
Hey, we sold it.
Oh, no.
It had been on the market for a year.
They didn't tell you guys?
Well, they told us when, well, it's sold now. And so then,
oh, no.
So we didn't have the house, but we thought we had it. So right to what you know you have.
That's when Super Ben producer jumps in, gets a new house, right?
Actually,
that's what you did, right?
Theo actually did the one on that
okay,
one.
Okay, okay.
Because he's like, well, I know a guy.
Okay.
And he called up. And but yes, to what you have.
Nice.
Okay.
So asking a lot of favors, I assume.
Oh, man.
Yeah, asking a lot of favors. Man, we can talk about this for hours. There is something, I think, you're making films. Most people already know it's like, hey, you're not paying my day rate, right? And you know the quality you have in your mind, but you know the budget, you can't reach that. I've worked as an AD as well for like the past 7 years. Mm-hmm. And thankfully I had a good reputation for, you know, getting people out and things like that. Mm-hmm. And finding that, well, here's a long-winded way of saying this. Nobody cares about the project, but they care about you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's true.
Like no one cares about the project. Yeah. And understanding that and then having people work on because they care about you. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, hey, I'm going to do my best. And that goes to Mikhail, our actor, typing and thing. He was just like, Theo, I don't know if this is going to work. But when we finally got the VFX shots and I would send him clips, I mean, he and I would talk, he'd be like, I had no idea. Yeah. And there's kind of that funny feeling when people watch our movies. Maybe you guys did as well. When people were just like, I knew I was going to watch a low-budget indie movie, but that kind of it doesn't quite feel like the other maybe indie movies of that. Right, and I think that's because that intentionality, but also having those people invest in you because a rising tide lifts all ships. And if you get enough people to like kind of believe in like this harbor that you have, you can really elevate your project. But that goes back to the work, you know, again, like the work that, you know, BJ is not just producing, but literally making breakfast. We're sleeping on the location.
Yeah.
You know, like the set that we're having.
Definitely,
all the little things right. between it, you know, like planning for all that stuff, you yeah. know, so.
And what was the most like challenging thing for you, Ben?
You know, one of the things that I've had to tell, and I think specifically of some of the arguments with our few executive producers on the project, because, you know, some things went too slow or some things went over budget, whatever, and so we're mm-hmm. going back and forth trying to understand what happened. And I remember telling them, I was like, look, guys, we all knew we didn't know what we're doing going in. We were people that have made sheds before, and we said, we think we can build a house. Mm-hmm. We're building that house. Mm-hmm. It's just happening different and longer than we expected. Mm-hmm. And I think that was kind of, you know, my biggest thing was, especially, so I, you know, I didn't go to film school. I don't have a degree in film. Mm-hmm. So my experience with these guys has always been kind of more voyeuristic, I feel. Mm-hmm. Although I know, like, I've been very helpful with all of our projects, but I don't know the first thing about a camera or lighting or any of this stuff. So I'm making the breakfast, I'm building the sets, I'm making sure the props are there, I'm making sure everything else goes smooth, because I don't know what to do with those monsters. Mm-hmm. And with all that said, there was so much that I couldn't have known that we were going to have to deal with and overcome. And yeah, it was just, it was a lot. But what I will say, one of my favorite things about the project is every day, when we finished, me and him sat down and we broke down the day. Mm-hmm. What worked, what didn't work. If we needed to cuss each other out at the time or whatever it was. Yeah. And then after that, we'd be like, okay, how do we make tomorrow better? Mm-hmm. And then even better, how do we make the next project better? Mm-hmm. And I think that was kind of the biggest thing of like being able to be aware enough in the moment that, hey, we just got to get through this thing. We're learning, we're growing. It's our first project. Who knows what issues are going to come up tomorrow? But we're going to be better equipped next time.
Yeah.
Nice. You know?
I love it.
Nice. Now imagine I'm a scumbag producer that has a coke habit. What's next, guys? We're at the Chateau Marmont. What's next, guys? What are you doing next? I love the movie.
Really
yeah. You want coke, April? Yeah. What's next? Oh,
good
man.
Question.
I mean, the proof of concept. We shot proof of concept in December. So that's mm-hmm. been, I mean, right now.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, well it's called Ivory and Gold. This is the first time publicly I think we're really talking about it. So
a little tease.
We haven't you know shared too much about it.
Yeah.
It's called Ivory and Gold. It's a bit of like a man. The easy way to say it is like you know magic dealing. What happens like magic in a black community? You know, think like Dope meets Harry Potter.
Okay,
anything like that. Ooh. But not to like the certain kind of thing. It's not like you know. It doesn't end, you know, with the police, you know, choke slamming somebody or anything like that. It's really just more so, it's like, you know, nobody thinks that Harry Potter is a white movie. Mm-hmm. It's just a movie with magic. Mm-hmm. So,
right.
And I think for, you know, us and a lot of people that we've kind of shared that's resonated with that is that we just want to kind of tell that kind of story.
Yeah.
Going back to the comic book things, you know, you're reading like Justice League Dark or mm-hmm. Constantine or things like that, you know, like those interesting magical elements.
Yeah.
I think that's just really fun, interesting world to kind of play in, you know, like American Gods, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's just a very interesting, unique space.
We definitely need more fantasy, especially on like the more like indie level. You know what I mean? Because you have like big blockbuster fantasy films.
Yeah.
But I love that. And I know you guys are really into genre films.
Oh, yeah.
And I know we got to talk because we applied to the same contest.
Yeah, yes, we did.
But, you know.
BJ is a horror guy, by the way. BJ.
Yeah.
BJ loves nightmare fuel.
Well, here's the thing.
Yeah. I get scared.
Here's what I've learned, right? Because I have friends that are horror fans. Mm-hmm. They've seen it all. They know it all. And then I have friends that abhor horror, mm-hmm. and they won't watch any of it.
Interesting.
Yeah. Those people swear that I am the expert of horror. But then my other friends that are the experts, they're like, you ain't no shit. You haven't seen anything scary
okay,
until
let me
you've seen
do you like Do you like horror films?
Oh, I love horror films.
Then you're a horror
but what
film
I'm saying
lover.
Is,
you know
what I'm saying is he's trying to set me up to have all this knowledge. And my horror.
No, I feel that. I feel that.
My horror love is really centered on, I think Ari Aster's work is really kind of like.
Yeah.
I don't know, Hereditary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just
which is crazy that he's not making horror anymore, you know?
See what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
He's just like,
yeah.
He started with a horror film that was actually meant to be a comedy film. And then
I didn't know it was supposed to be a comedy.
Yeah, Hereditary.
Which one was supposed to be a comedy?
Hereditary.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? Because now that you look back, it's like, oh, I could see how that could be a comedy film.
But then, Theo, I must ask, do you like horror? Yes, no?
I
He hates it. No, I'm kidding.
And it's okay, man.
I like The Thing.
Oh, okay.
Right? Jurassic Park, you can argue, has certain horror. There's certain aspects, you know, like whatever that kind of bubble is, but you're not going to see me watching like Skinamarink, you know what I mean?
Right, this is not a joke.
I get terrified at these films. I don't enjoy getting scared, and I get scared very easily. Halloween Horror Nights, all the above.
As long as you know that every horror movie but Debbie and the Devil is shit, we're good. Just kidding, I love horror movies.
We love it, but I mean, a lot of the people that work with us, honestly, like, don't watch horror. Yeah. So it's always interesting because we always find common ground with other things.
And I think they're great, by the way. I hear him talk with like friends, and they're just like, man, you want to watch this thing? And they're just like, think how terrible, like, you know, the Babadook is. And I'm like, that sounds terrible.
I'm pretty scary.
I'm a tall guy. Imagine me in a theater shaking. That's a lot of energy. You don't want that.
Real talk though, I'm like that with scary video games. I can't do Resident Evil.
I want to. But I can't.
What's the point? Too much. I don't want to freak myself out. I want to be Mario or Zelda.
Because you really don't know what's going to happen in those video games.
So I'm with you, man. Yeah. And the thing is, like, we watch horror movies like comedies. You know what I mean? Like,
I've tried to unlock that. I really have. No, I've really tried. I was like, maybe I can just, like, desensitize to it. And, like, one terrible day later, I'm just like, no.
So what have we learned? We have learned that Theo does not like horror films. Ben likes them a little bit. We have learned that Theo searches reviews for learning. I search for vanity. And we have also learned that if you want to make your film, write around what you have, not what you think you have.
Yeah.
And gentlemen, I really want to thank you for coming down to the lair. This has been a lovely time.
We can chat forever about like filmmaking.
We can really go for another hour. You want to go? Let's go.
I would love to actually hear about your film. I feel that, and I know you guys probably talk about it all the time.
Again,
making these films, obviously, we know the kind of budget area they're doing. Horror tends to be a popular thing. Mm-hmm. What was it for you guys? Like, was it generally the love of the genre, or is it like the, we know we can get this, we know we can, like, yeah.
April, you take it away, and then I can speak for me.
So, for anybody that doesn't know, we made a movie called Debbie and the Devil. It's a horror comedy that has animation in it. I produced it, Nas wrote it, and directed it, and animated it, and starred in it. Man. And, you know, we have another team, Silent Chris, co-produced it, and all this stuff. But basically, originally, it was pretty much like a horror. It was a horror comedy,
right?
But it was very different from the film that it ended up being for many reasons. But
why so?
Well, because of budget, I would say, mostly. But we'll get into that.
Yeah.
But so I've always loved horror. And so when I was introduced to Nas, you know, somebody recommended me to him. And they're like, oh, he needs a producer. And it was actually the DP, and he was like, I want to make my first feature as a DP. And anyway, we connected. I read the script, and I saw the teaser that they made. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. So we connected over the love of horror. And then, yeah, we just decided to make it. But as far as the reason for making the horror film.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to. Some of the funnest times I've had, like the funnest time I had in a theater as a kid was when I went to see Scream with my friends. Mm. And people were like throwing popcorn and yelling and stuff. And it was just a fun time.
You're a sick person.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Theo. We were doing so well. But I just wanted to make something, because, I mean, a horror film with a low budget, you can make that. You can pull that off. Yeah. You know? And I'm very impressed with what you guys pulled off with An Electric Sleep.
I saw a bunch of yours, you know, like got a chance to come through. It's insane.
Thank you, seriously.
Like,
well, I actually got a shout out Robert Bravo because he's a magician.
And the stuff was.
You heard how they know Robert Bravo.
I overheard. And by the way, forgive me. Before the show, I was saving all my conversation juice, so I was very quiet.
but what a funny connection.
Yeah, no, I wanted to make something that people could just have fun with and have horror elements in it. But just have something that is fun. Like, my next thing is literally just the things that I like. Uh-huh. And I think if I just make things of the things that I like, a few other people may like it in the world.
Yeah.
And by a few, hopefully millions and billions.
Can I ask you a personal question
to that?
I heard you mention that you had made a teaser. Mm-hmm. I guess. So you had already been working on the idea before it kind of grown.
It was a long journey, huh?
Yeah.
But you just said right now is that like the next one you want to make is the one for you. So just curious, like when you came up with that idea for the first one, what was the process like for you when you said, I know there's other stories that I probably am closer to. like, why not immediately go with that?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing is, here's the thing with Debbie and the Devil and the second one.
Yeah.
They're really personal. Yeah. Like, it, like, I've always been the type of guy, and I try to, I am as professional as one can be, but when it comes to, like, that little box that you put the thing, my view is put as much of yourself into that because that's authentic. Mm-hmm. And the flip side of that is that I've heard authenticity can be dangerous and expensive. But on the same token, when you got nothing to lose and you're making your first thing, just fucking swing that thing and knock Goliath off of his crown, you know, or whatever the fuck. I don't know what I'm talking about.
That was good. That was good.
Yeah, but, you know, and so Debbie and the Devil, if you watch it, there's a lot of me in there. There's embarrassingly so. Mm. And the second one, it's going to be the same thing. And that's how I've always operated. But I've been blessed with knowing people that know the technical aspects. And you know what I mean? Like, so I'm not just some artist that's not weighed down to the ground. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I don't even know if that answered your question.
No, it definitely did.
But I will say, like, we actually made a documentary just from all the footage from the behind the scenes.
That's awesome.
It's called Hellacious, the Making of an Indie Horror Film, right?
And on Tubi.
Like, you know, it's a feature, and I co-directed it with him, and, you know, we just produced it. We had a bunch of, like, we kind of put together our own press junket with interviewing the talent.
Captain Morgan
during
also.
The pandemic, and Captain Morgan. Yeah. So it kind of, like, we got really personal, and we kind of we gave people a little bit more insight as to, like, the meaning behind the film and, like, what went into it. And and it tells the story of, like, how we all met. But, like, it's people really learn about, like, Nas and, like, his experience with that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very, like you said, it's very personal.
Yeah,
I'll let him.
Oh, yeah,
you know. But you don't have to talk about it. But
No, I mean, that one, too. Like, it was, like, we were Captain Morgan, who works with us, and April were cutting together the doc, and it was good, and it was like one of those almost like fluffy kind of like, oh, it was great making the movie, blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
And then on our 2-year anniversary, I was like, fuck it, man, I could really put some juice in here and make it like really crazy, Heart of Darkness, Francis Ford Coppola kind of style. And so I did, and so that's how I like to do it. You know what I mean? Just pump it full of you. That sounded awful. Let's leave it at that. I apologize, Richard. I apologize, everyone in the room. I apologize.
That happens a lot of times.
But anywho, bang.
But I mean, do you guys have any other questions for us?
I mean, I could keep talking to you about this throughout.
I mean, I just want to. There's a whole component of our conversation that we're not having of just geeking out on stuff. Like, what have you seen lately that you think is good? Let's go.
Oh, man. I mean, I just watched Oppenheimer for like the fifth time. Last night. I'm not sure when this will air, but our friend Richard is here in the studio with us. It's his birthday today.
Hey, Richard.
Happy birthday, Richard.
Visiting from New York.
Happy birthday.
And obviously with the Oscars just happening, he hadn't seen Oppenheimer, so I never missed a chance to watch it.
Oh, nice.
So that's kind of the, I mean, but obviously all the Oscar films and things like that, but. Yeah. Outside of that, I mean,
what about you, Ben?
Holdovers.
The Holdovers. Yeah. That was a good one.
Holdovers.
Same,
It's great. Wait,
are these your guys' favorite films of last year?
Oh, no, I don't know. I can't say that.
Probably Across the Spider-Verse. That's one of my personal favorites from last
year. Got snubbed.
I mean,
for sure.
It's just so good.
I gotta say, Godzilla Minus One.
Oh, man.
Oh, the guy, listen, let's give a personal congratulations to our big man, Godzilla. No, I saw it twice, my friend.
I saw it in black and white.
Oh, you did?
I wanted to see it in black and white.
Was it good?
Masterpiece. Like,
kids, Godzilla has been working in the film industry for 75 years. He's been in over 30 films, and he finally won his first Oscar. Let's go.
To Godzilla.
To chasing your dreams and never giving up.
Is that true?
Yeah.
It's by far the best.
I love it.
Like, it's just...
It's incredible.
What they decided to do.
Oh, man.
It's about a person with PTSD and survivor skill. And they're like, what if we just put this in a Godzilla movie?
And what's crazy is my mom told me to go see it. And I was like, okay. She's like, no, you need to go see that one. And like, in our family, we don't watch trailers.
I love that.
She was like, go see that. And I was like, okay, whatever, mom. And I go and see it. And I'm just like, in the theater.
My friend told me the same thing. And she's not really like a Godzilla fan.
Yeah.
And she's like, I cried. Haven't seen it, but I've heard it's really good.
It's better than you think it is.
And it's crazy.
Yeah. It's the scariest I have seen him be. Mm. And I know my Godzilla. I know his moves.
He loves Godzilla. Yeah, like, he's got so many figurines.
I know when he jumps up and down, when he flies backwards. I know his whole thing. I know all of his shtick. Yeah. Yeah. Gentlemen, this has been like a blast. Yeah. A super amazing. Fun. I feel like I just want to hang with you guys.
We'll keep
and
the
talk
conversation going
stuff.
After.
We've got a lot of water left in this bottle.
Oh, hey. Yeah. By the way, sorry. Okay, I just keep jump starting the conversation. But are you guys into anime and stuff? Was that an influence on An Electric Sleep? You know, Ghost in the Shell, maybe?
Oh, well, I wish I could say so. I saw Ghost in the Shell, actually, after we made the movie. Mm. But I saw it on IMAX, so.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
Just like, well, just
like, he's like, but I saw it in, like, 70 mil at, like, the City Walk, so. Because
right. You can easily just watch it on your smartwatch. Right. Yeah. But
your smartwatch?
Dune.
No.
Did you see Dune Part 2?
No. But because the City Walk 70 mil is, like, sold out, and I just.
Yeah, we live
in L.A. I've got to see it. I've got to see it there. And I'm not going to watch it, you know, like, looking up at the screen.
But I recommend IMAX.
Exactly.
So you saw it.
Yeah. I saw it in Louisiana, which was the one thing in Louisiana that made me want to come back because their theater was not as great as our LA house.
Sorry, Louisiana.
Though I have to say, I love New Orleans.
No
have you
shade.
Ever been there?
I'm from Dallas.
Oh, really? Oh, so that's close by?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I don't know why I'm saying that like you're coolly from Dallas. Only a couple of hours, man. I would do terrible things for boiled peanuts.
Oh, yeah?
It is such a southerner thing, but Louisiana.
Boiled peanuts.
Oh, the food, man.
Yeah, oh, my God.
Don't get me started on that.
Oh. Yeah. I had to walk every day so the food wouldn't kill my arteries and everything. Man. It was a bit much. But I loved it, New Orleans. Yeah. I loved it. I want to go back.
Yeah. The praline pecans.
Come on. Some beignets?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Louisiana.
At the Café du Monde.
See? Anything is even around the French Quarter, especially when it's not like the touristy like peak season.
Yeah.
Just, oh, come on.
You guys, let's go to New Orleans and we'll watch movies.
Field trip,
stuff.
Let's go.
Let's do it.
Nobody has theaters like us, so that's a moral of the story.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Wow, guys, we almost went an hour here. Hey, man,
well,
gentlemen.
We're gonna wrap it up.
Yeah, well, anyway, guys.
Music time.
Bump up that cosmic drive. The music hypnotizes the guests to get in our groove.
Yeah.
And then we release the energies. Thank you so much. Stay tuned for the trailer of An Electric Sleep.
Yes. I dropped my drink. How embarrassing.
Right. Yeah.
Can you guys plug, like, where can we find you guys on Instagram, TikTok, wherever you're at? And then where can we watch this movie?
Yeah. Mr.Ben_Taylor on Instagram.
I'm Theo Brown on IG. You can also just search my username. It's awesome, and then letter R at the end.
Nice.
And then awesomer Theo. Yes. I love saying the word awesome.
Yeah. Nice.
Love it.
Because you are awesome.
Oh.
And then, well, the movie's playing on Tubi. It's playing. We're playing on Prime.
We're on Momitu.
I gotta give a shout out to Momitu. Streaming service for indie film.
Yep. Love that.
We're on Brick TV.
Yeah, just
and we're on Afroland TV as of, I don't know.
Okay.
But power to the people.
I love it. How exciting. Nice. Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's been amazing. You know, and you make a film, you know, with some friends, and now you end up playing, you know, doing things you never imagined you could dream. So,
and then you make friends with people on the other side of the paradigm shift. It's nice. Hey, nice to meet you guys.
Yeah. Oh, nice
I look
to
forward
you.
To hanging with you
Pleasure
guys.
Is mine.
We're going to go to New Orleans, have a party, get some boiled peanuts and some crawfish and stuff. We're going to do our thing.
Yeah, and then you can follow me on Instagram and TikTok at April Directs. Keep an eye out for our upcoming projects, our film Waits coming down the road, but just keep an eye out for that. We have a film called Skrilla. It is currently on YouTube. Check
Crushing
out Amiga's The Telenovela on Tubi. And
I'm
Amazon.
In it. I speak Spanish.
Yeah, it is Spanish. The subtitles. Yeah. And of course, check out Debbie and the Devil. You can buy our Blu-ray on our site, watch it on Amazon or Tubi.
Do a festival. Do a Theo Ben April Nas Chris Troll festival. And just
weekend.
Watch all of our stuff and get
weekend.
With your friends. Yeah. Do some cocaine or something. I don't care.
Or not. Enjoy An Electric Sleep. If you're into sci-fi and genre films and you want to support your local filmmakers, go support and watch those commercials because that's how people get paid.
Awesome.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
I am Dr. Wallace Rockwell, and my partner and wife is Dr. Amber Jones Rockwell.
We use science to improve lives. We built organs,
bio-nanotech.
Biomechanics was our passion.
After I got sick, we moved the family off the grid, and we were gonna focus on us.
course. The agency wanted more.
This girl, she's sick.
Is the girl going to be an issue?
The girl's heading to Dr. Rockwell's house. We can't risk him telling anyone. There is no operation if we're compromised.
Why would you make something like this?
All we wanted to do was to improve human genome sequencing.
We left when they tried to weaponize it. It's even more lethal now.
She knows we're using the nanovirus.
It's not just a regular virus that we can just attack with antibodies. It was made to work.
We need to accelerate getting the team ready.
We don't have much time. You're surrounding the house.
Is there anything we can do?
Pray.
Do anything to save your life.
All those years, we were playing God. We've missed so much.
We can develop a cure.
You sure you're ready for this?